o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tomorrow, the NBA draft. Could be a busy night for the Phoenix Suns. It was a year and a half ago, the last time, which is really weird to think about it, right? The last NBA draft was a year and a half ago. Yeah, it was. Yep. Boy, that's weird. It's been a year and a half since the last NBA draft. Okay, that's
When's the next one?
After this,
this one tomorrow, when is it?
The next one, I presume, will be at its usual time. June-ish? Somewhere? Mid to late June, right?
Won't they be playing through July or no?
Well, yeah, but they still... Well, no, I guess you're right. They hold the draft. Oh. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Gambo's right. You're right and Gambo's right. The season's supposed to end around July 24th, 25th. So I would imagine the NBA draft would be probably mid-August, something like that. I would think it's usually mid to late June, right after the NBA finals end. But
like
the finals are getting pushed back like a month or so. So yeah, it's but at least that'll be closer to when we normally expect it. This is weird. It's been a year and a half since the NBA draft. But think back to a year and a half ago, how busy the Suns were that night.
Very busy.
I mean, it was Ty Jerome and it was Cam Johnson and it was That's So Love, Bro, and that was Dario Saric and that was
Aaron Baines.
All that happened on draft night. I mean, yeah. TJ Warren, all of that was on draft night. So that's one way, and we'll talk specifically about the draft. Then on Friday, free agency. Off we go. Fill your rosters, spend your money. Try to figure out how you can build around this Chris Paul acquisition. Let's talk about what's already on the Suns roster, who you think's going to be back, who you think won't be back.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of build off of that conversation.
You know, I think the key piece that they've got to have back, they want back, and I think they're going to get it done, is Dario Saric. They've got a cap hold on Dario, and I expect that they'll sign him to a multi-year deal. I don't know how many years. Two-year deal, three-year deal, but I doubt that it's going to be a one-year deal. They like him. He fills a valuable role, which, you know, you pointed that out a lot during the bubble, how much you were pleased watching him play. You know, coming off the bench, he could play the four. He could also be the backup five for them. He could play some backup five. So I think the number one priority is to bring back Dario. I think they'll get it done. I'm expecting a multi-year deal, and I don't think he goes anywhere. That's number one.
Okay.
The other guys I'm expecting not to come back. Well, let me just start with two more that I think will come back. Campaign and Javon Carter. I think those guys are back because they really like what those guys did in the backcourt, second unit. So I expect both of them back. The guys that I don't expect back are Aaron Baines, Frank Kaminsky, and Shaq Diallo. I don't believe that those guys will be back. Now, you know, I'm pretty positive about it. So I think that, you know, Baines for $10 million a year, he's just not available. He's always hurt. He's more of a third string center. I think you can get a backup center for a lot cheaper than that. Kaminsky, you know, again, the guy was hurt. I just don't think he plays any defense. And even with that option, I don't think that they pick up that option. And then Diallo, again, I think that they'll find somebody else to play those minutes. So I think there's a good chance. It's unlikely. Let me just say it that way. It's unlikely that those three guys are back. But I think Dario comes back, Carter, Payne come back. And then, you know, you've got to fill the roster spots with the exceptions that you have, the non-taxpayer exception, the biannual exception, the draft pick you have. You've got to fill those roster spots with players like that.
And just as an aside, a couple of things. Number one, I'm glad to hear that about Dario Saric because you're absolutely right. I was just wholly impressed by how he played in the bubble. It was like looking at a new, different guy. And if it took him that long to figure out his role in a Monty Williams coach team, then that I'm fine. I want him back because I loved how he played in the bubble. I thought he was one of the top storyline makers in the bubble for the Suns. And they had a lot of guys who made stories in the bubble. So I'm very happy to hear that. Number two, I get why people are asking you a lot about Aaron Baines, and I understand what you're saying, but I think you appreciate how, even in his 1 year here, how popular he was with the fans. I mean, I know he didn't play a lot, I know he was hurt, and I know after that great start, but think about it. In that first month of the season, when the Suns were relevant again,
Baines was killing it.
He was killing it.
He was knocking everything down from three and he was playing good defense.
He was so popular.
Physical.
And physical. And a guy, you know, a guy used to winning. And in that locker room, the presence that he brought, there was just, I got a sense among the Suns fans that Aaron Baines was just a really, so you can see their hesitation to just see him go, right? Oh, come on. Try and bring him back. Can't you find a way to bring him back? And I get what you're saying. $10 million for a guy who's hurt as much as he is an awful lot to pay. But I can also see fans who are going to miss him while he's gone, because he was a lot of fun to watch when he was at his best for the Suns.
Yep.
Okay. Money to spend. They don't have as much to spend because of the timing of this deal. It's subtracted by a little, but not a hugely substantial amount. They basically have some exceptions to be able to use.
True.
The biggest one is the $9.2 million, which a lot of teams have, but that $9.2 million they have to spend, it's just a question of who they're going to use that on.
Yeah, it's the non-taxpayer, right? They're above the cap. So everybody above the cap, if you're under the tax, you get a non-taxpayer exemption. It's about like 9.3? I think it's something like that.
It's 9.3.
9.3 million. And then you get the biannual, which is 3.6 million. So that's why I kept saying, everybody, so does it matter when you do it before or after the draft? Not really. Not really. It's about the same amount of money. They were going to have about 10 million in cap space available. And then they could have used that cap space and then got a $5 million exception. So they would have had about $15 million to spend. And this way, instead, they've got, you know, like 13.5. So it was really very similar whether you did the trade before or after the new league year started. It wasn't much of a difference money wise. But now you've got, you know, a lot of these teams do get the non-taxpayer exception and the biannual. So, you know, you've got to compete with some other teams now, but you do have money to spend. You can go up to, you know, just under $10 million for a player and sign that player.
There's a lot of teams, as you mentioned, a lot of teams who are in this category. Over the tax, they've got this, or over the cap, and they've got this exception to spend. I think it's like 24, 25 teams that have this 9.3 to be able to spend. The question that I have, and Bobby Marks brought this up with us yesterday, the NBA insider for ESPN. Does the addition of Chris Paul and Booker and Ayton and Monty make the Suns now a far more attractive destination for these players when they're going to consider similar financial offers?
Yes. I mean, it has to.
What free agents can he draw that guys want to do a little bargain shopping and have a chance to go play in Phoenix that maybe they can make a little bit more money somewhere else? Is it maybe a Serge Ibaka or Gallinari? I know those guys are probably more than what Phoenix can offer, but are guys going to want to come here and take a little bit of a discount to play on the Suns team? I think that's going to be the interesting thing when free agency starts at the end of the week.
If I'm getting $9.3 million from the Bulls or $9.3 million from the Suns, I'll take the Suns, right? I mean, it's clear cut. I wonder how many teams the addition of Chris Paul vaults the Suns over when it comes to, oh, I'll consider that team now because they have Chris Paul. Where does this put them in the pecking order because of the addition of Chris Paul and the emergence last year? I don't know the end, but it's got to help, right?
I think that it helps a lot. I think that you look at the Suns now and you factor as a player. You look at the Suns, you're like, I want to play with Paul and Booker. I mean, those are two great guards, and I want to play with those guys. I want to play for Monty. I want to live in Phoenix, where the weather's beautiful, you know, during the season. I want to, you know, think about when you're going to start the season. December, January, February, March, April, May, out by June. What a great place to live for those 7 months, huh? Sure. So you live in Phoenix, you play for Monty, you got the best practice facility in the NBA that you're going to practice in. You're playing with, you know, Chris Paul, who's going to the Hall of Fame, Devin Booker, who may end up being a Hall of Fame player, playing for a coach that everybody respects and likes, and you're for your team on the rise. Like, I think all of that stuff does factor. And in the past, you would look at the Suns and you compare them to five teams and say they're fourth or fifth. Now you think that they're first or second. You really do.
It seems like it should make a difference, right? Because as Bobby Marks pointed out, Chris Paul picked the Suns.
From a cultural standpoint, and I know we throw that word around a lot, I think if you're a Phoenix Sun fan and you work in that organization, you know, basically Chris Paul chose you, right? I mean, like,
right.
I know he didn't have a no trade clause in his contract, but he basically dictated where he wanted to go. I mean, that's the relationship that he had with Sam Presti. And Sam's track record is that he will accommodate, you know, the All-Stars where if they want to go somewhere. And it wasn't going to work out with probably either LA teams and, you know, Phoenix. Phoenix is right there, closer to home, warm weather. So I think that says a lot about the organization of kind of where they are right now.
And if they're going to take that next step as an organization, being an attractive free agent destination for guys post Chris Paul is a big part of that.
I think, look, I think for the next 2 years, they're going to be hard pressed to add anybody else. Like, this is their team. Booker's on a max deal, Paul's on a max deal, and you're going to have to re-up DeAndre. So I think that you build around those guys for 2 years.
Yeah.
When Paul leaves, you're going to hope that you've taken the next step, that you could lure the player that's going to replace Chris Paul.
But I'm not talking about like premier free agents right now. I'm just talking about for guys that you can get at that 9.3. Sure. Those are the players.
Could you get Christian Wood out of Detroit? Could you get a Serge Ibaka? Could you get somebody like that that wants to come here and play and help this team win? Yeah, that's the guys that you'll be looking at. DJ Augustine.
Right. Yes. DJ Augustine. That's a very interesting name, by the way. DJ Augustine is a very interesting.
I would not rule DJ Augustine out.
When a brand new Devin Booker Phoenix Suns The Valley jersey, text The Valley to 62620 to enter. That's Valley to 620620. Text and data rates may apply. When we come back on this Tuesday edition of the Burns and Gambo show, Russell Wilson, he carried the Seahawks to a 5-0 start. Currently has Seattle in a first place NFC West tie. Is all of the work that it took to get there starting to catch up to the Seahawks quarterback? We'll answer that question coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. I mean, there's a real question right now as we welcome you back into the Burns and Gambo show. A real question about whether Russell Wilson's bad day against the LA Rams and his bad day against the Buffalo Bills and his high turnover day against the Arizona Cardinals is symptomatic of more than just a bad day, that it's the reflection of Russell Wilson's had a terrible defense all year long. Russell Wilson has had running backs who have been in and out of the lineup. There have been injuries on that team all year long. And that Russell Wilson has, in essence, had to carry the Seattle Seahawks for the better part of the first 9-10 weeks of the season. And that he is just worn out because his numbers in the last three games have not been good at all. And people are legitimately starting to wonder what's going on with
him. You know, they were 5-0, and it was that game against the Cardinals. And in that game against the Cardinals, something happened that I think changed their trajectory for Seattle this year. They were 5-0 and they lost the game, but it wasn't just losing the game. They lost both running backs. They lost Carlos Hyde. They lost Chris Carson. Those guys were lost in that game. Since then, they continued to struggle. In the three games since, they've had to rely on a rookie named DJ Dallas, a second-year player named Travis Homer, and a practice squad call-up named Alex Collins. They've had 281 yards rushing in those three games, but Wilson had 88 of those. And if you compare it to Carson, who's averaging 5 yards a carry almost, and Hyde, who's averaging 4 yards a carry, the production just wasn't the same. So you take out that running game, and all of a sudden what we're seeing is Russell Wilson start to throw the ball a lot more.
Yeah.
And the numbers are kind of baffling. I mean, if you go back 2 years ago, Seattle and Russell Wilson threw the ball 47.6% of the time. So they actually ran it more than they passed it.
Sure.
Last year, that changed. They threw it 54% of the time, and they ran it 46. So they changed. This year, Burnsy, they're throwing it 63% of the time. They're rushing it 37. 63% of their plays are pass plays. So Russell Wilson is basically having to do it on his own. Now, those numbers, a lot of it has to do without these two running backs. Maybe teams are figuring it out. Maybe Russ has been taking a beating, whatever it is. I mean, they've gone from 47% to 54% to 63% passing the football.
You remember what it was called early in the season, right? Let Russ cook. That's what they were all saying.
Is that what it was?
Let Russ cook. You know what? For so long, the idea was the offense in Seattle was centered around the running game. I mean, Marshawn Lynch and Beast Mode and all that stuff, right? And this year, to the point of the numbers that you just gave, the 63%, it was really obvious around the league that Seattle had changed their philosophy, that this was the year they were going to let Russ cook. Hey, you're the guy. Go out there and win games for us. Throw it 63% of the time. You got DK Metcalf. You got Tyler Lockett. You got David Moore. Throw it. And I don't know if it's the injuries to Carson and Hyde. I don't know if it's, I suspect It's how bad that defense is and how Russell Wilson probably feels like he has to overcompensate for how bad that defense is. But it's pretty clear that let Russ cook. He's starting to run out of ingredients, right? And he's kind of looking around the kitchen trying to figure out what exactly he's got left to cook with. And he's running out of things to cook with.
And he might not have Tyler Lockett to cook with this week.
He might not.
I mean, Tyler Lockett is questionable for this game, right? He didn't practice. Yeah. So you keep your eye on that. They should get the running backs back. But, you know, DK Metcalf has been shut down a couple of times. The Cardinals shut him down. The Rams.
Jalen Ramsey shut him down. Big time,
so,
yeah.
You know, some teams are figuring out how to contain DK Metcalf. The Cardinals and the Rams, two teams in the division, did it. So, you know, and I think the cooking, you know, I mean, that chef might be getting tired.
Right.
I mean, that chef might be pulling a double shift or something.
Like, how many more meals do I have to cook
right
here, right?
Yeah.
How many more, you know?
After time, Gordon Ramsay gets tired of making the same, you know, same meal.
Kitchen's getting a little backed up, right? You go into a restaurant, you order your meal, and it's going to take 45 minutes for an hour for it to get out. Kitchen's a little backed up. Hey, what's going on back there? Are they cooking my food or not?
Mm.
Did you get my order or not? You know, and Russ is, I'm trying, man. I'm trying. I'm cooking. I'm trying to do what I can. You mentioned the injuries. Here's Pete Carroll talking about Tyler Lockett.
Knee sprain in general. He's already had it checked out and MRI and all that kind of stuff. So he's a little bit discomfort, a little bit of swelling today, but it's not a serious knee injury. So we'll look to see how he does day to day and take it till Thursday.
Now, you mentioned the running backs. Pete Carroll also said he thinks that Carlos Hyde is going to make it back for Thursday's game against the Cardinals. He's not sure about Chris Carson. As of yesterday, that Chris was, quote, working to get back. He's trying to make it. Carlos is a little bit ahead of him now, so we'll see how that goes. So you figure Hyde back, we'll see about Chris Carson. I think a big one to watch is on the offensive line. They're starting center dealing with a concussion. He didn't play against the Rams. The backup, Kyle Fuller, suffered a high ankle sprain. They think he can play on Thursday, but if he can't, they're going to have to go with their third string center against the Cardinals in Jamarco Jones, and that's no bueno.
No, Fuller did a good job. I think Prosich is the starter, but Fuller did a good job against Aaron Donald, but Aaron Donald didn't have any sacks or tackles in the game. So the backup center actually did a nice job, helping to contain Aaron Donald to, you know, just didn't have a great game. He, you know, the Rams got to Wilson, but it wasn't Aaron Donald that did it. They were able to contain him a little bit. But you look for every advantage you can get. I mean, I'm sure that in Seattle, they're looking at, hey, no Corey Peters. Okay. That's a benefit. No, sure. Corey Peters. You just, I mean, at this time, you know, there's very few NFL games going on where, okay, what's the injury report? None. Everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
Everybody's good to go. You know, there's always somebody that's banged up or not practicing and stuff like that at this time of the season.
But if I'm holding them side by side, it looks for now like the Seahawks are in a worse position than the Cardinals are when 100%. It comes to the injuries, right? Especially on the short week. Now, of course, the last time these two teams met, it was just a few weeks ago. Cardinals defense got torched in the first half. They did a much better job in the second half. Vance Joseph talked today about keeping Russell Wilson in check this time around.
I thought in the first half of that game, they simply played faster than we did. You know, they had a great plan. They had a bunch of shifts and motions that we were chasing and not being ahead of. And they made a huge play on the first play of the game, which put them in a high red zone early. You know, both of Lockett's, big catches in the first half led to scores. You know, I mean, his first catch was, 40 yards plus. His second one was almost 50 yard plus. So those two plays actually hurt us and led to 14 points. Outside of that, it was just good football, you know, on both sides.
But in the second half, they did a much better job.
Seven possessions, right? They had the two picks. They forced a bunch of punts. Now, they gave up to two touchdowns, but that's a good Buffalo Bills offense. And seven possessions, they ended up with 14 points out of seven possessions. You know what? We'll take it. You know, because your goal of that defense, I mean, you're not going to hold them to 10 points in a football game. Your goal of that defense is to get enough stops to give your offense time to win the football game. And they did that.
Yeah. I'm looking for an injury report for the Cardinals today. I don't think I've seen one yet. I don't think it's come out yet to see, but I do know based off of the practice report that Darren Urban put out there on Twitter, much earlier in the day, that it looked like some of the guys who had been hurt yesterday that were on the injured report were able to practice today. It's a real tricky thing with the Thursday night game. Usually there's not a whole lot of practicing going on. They're basically glorified walkthroughs because you're trying to get the guys to rest their bodies as best they can. But the Cardinals did get some of their guys back today, and we'll get a better idea tomorrow what the availability is for
Thursday. One of the things you go over in this game is, like, the second that you get an interception, everybody look for DK Metcalf and block him. Man, that is one of the, I'm going over that. Pat Pete got it. Look for DK. Buddha's got it. Look for DK. Dre's got it. Find DK.
By the way, Buddha revealed on Twitter today that they found him for another performance-enhancing test. Like, you know how they've been testing him a bunch this year?
Yeah.
He's like, yep, they tested me again. All these PED tests, they think I'm on something. He tweeted out, hashtag still natural. So apparently Buddha has drawn the attention of the test takers.
I just want DK blocked on every single interception in his game. Russell's throwing a lot of picks these days.
After pulling a trade for Chris Paul, the attention of the Suns now turns to tomorrow's NBA draft, and it appears James Jones has options, lots of options, on what to do with the 10th overall pick. We'll talk about them next, tell you what they are next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The NBA draft is tomorrow night. We'll have complete coverage of it right here on the flagship home of the Phoenix Suns. You can always count on us for the very best draft coverage. We'll have Bickley and Murata in here. We'll be doing it roundtable style. We'll not only be talking about the draft, because look, we get it. This draft, it's not exactly filled with household names, right? I mean, we do this for a living, and sometimes I struggle to remember, you know, guys and where they went and where they're from and what position they play, because it's just, there's not a lot of name value in this year's draft.
There was no NCAA tournament.
That did not help.
We did not have an NCAA tournament.
That did not help.
When a lot of people who don't watch a lot of college basketball, but they watch the college basketball, oh, okay, I know that guy, I know that guy. The NCAA tournament makes people very familiar with the players who are getting drafted.
Plus, the draft is normally in June. So the amount of separation we've had from the end of the NCAA season to now, we just added on 5 more months to that, right? I mean, even if there was no NCAA tournament, the last college basketball game we all saw was, what, March 11th?
Last basketball game I saw was St. John's, the Big East tournament. They were literally everybody else had shut down. They were at halftime. Yeah. I forgot who they were playing. It might have been Providence. I'd have to look it up. But I remember watching the game. It was the Big East tournament. St. John's was playing, and I was watching it at home, and everybody else was canceled. They're done, they're done, they're done, they're done. But yet the Big East was still playing. And then at halftime, they come out, and they stopped the game at halftime.
Yeah.
They stopped the St. John's game at halftime. Okay, we're done too. They didn't finish the game and then call it. They just stopped it at halftime.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was, March? I mean, that was, you're talking about 8 months ago. Months since we've seen any college basketball at all.
And
so
look what's happening. Was it New Mexico? And New Mexico State has their college basketball team moving to Phoenix.
New Mexico State.
New Mexico State's moving to Phoenix. I mean, 9 months later, we're like, this is what we have. The Ivy League just canceled. I mean, I would have never thought 9 months ago that this is where we'd be. The Ivy League just canceled. New Mexico State's moving to Phoenix. Their football team moved to Vegas.
That was New Mexico, not New Mexico.
That was New Mexico.
State.
I get those mixed up.
I know you do. All right, let's talk about this draft, because there isn't a lot of name recognition, but now we're about to give you some name recognition. Let's talk about players who will be considered by the Phoenix Suns if they stay at number 10. And we'll talk about whether they're going to stay or not in a minute. But if they stay at number 10, you've mentioned 7 names, but you kind of said there are like 3 or 4 that you think are closer to the top of the list.
Listen, I'm ruling out a few guys, and I'll just hit that quick. I'm going to rule out Killian Hayes. He's in a lot of mock drafts, but I don't see Killian Hayes. I don't see Aaron Nesmith. I don't see Tyrese Halliburton. I don't see R.J. Hampton. None of the U of A guys. Theo Maledon. I don't see any of those guys. Tyrell Terry, don't see it. So those are the guys that I'm not. They're not on my board when I put my board together. So my board is going to have. And I'm going to assume that Okoro and Abdijah are gone, the kid from Israel. Because I think if those guys are there, then that changes everything. So Okoro and Denny Abdijah, if those guys are there, they're in play. But I'm hearing from all the teams I speak to, they're gone. So here's who I have. Devin Vassell, Kyra Lewis, Sadiq Bey, Jalen Smith, Precious Achiuwa, Tyrese Maxey, Desmond Bain. I've kind of narrowed it down to those players. If Okoro or Abdijara there, that changes things. But if they're not there, and I think they'll be gone, then my board is Lewis, Vassell, Bay, Smith, Achua, Maxey, and Bain, and I'm pretty sure it would be one of those guys that get drafted.
All right, let's go through a few of these here because we've got some draft
profiles. So that's seven. It's the Gambo seven. I'll try to narrow it to the Gambo five tomorrow.
All right, Kira Lewis is the point guard out of Alabama. Here is our draft profile for him.
Kira Lewis Jr., point guard, Alabama.
The speediest ball handler of this bunch is Lewis, who can finish with the best of them and has enough shake to go with his ability to accelerate and get to the rim. Lewis did a little bit of everything for the Crimson Tide at point guard, running an effective pick-and-roll offense while also shooting at a decent rate off the dribble. He needs to progress in the way he sees the floor and stay locked in defensively, but there is a lot to like in Lewis's game.
Sarah, do I have you to thank for having that tune stuck in my head now for the rest of basically my life? Is that you?
I think you have JV to thank.
JV to thank for that. Thank you, JV, for sticking that tune in my head now. For at least the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
All right, that's Kira Lewis, the point guard out of Alabama. Here's Devin Vassell. He is the shooting guard out of Florida State and the one I'm very intrigued by at that spot.
Devin Vassell, shooting guard, Florida State.
It's hard not to throw the 3-and-D label on Vassell because that's what most of his game is. A 41% three-point shooter for the Seminoles, Vassell was one of the best defenders in college basketball last season, both on and off the ball. He finished consistently around the rim and was capable of shooting off the dribble, which could mean there's some offensive upside. Vassell's bread and butter, though, is spacing the floor and defending.
Look, they're looking for guys that could play right away, not guys that are going to be projects. Lewis is a project. That's why I'm really leery on Lewis, because he's not able to play right away. He's not a guy that could play right away. Vassell's a guy that could play right away. So that's, you know, so probably gives him a little bit of an edge. I think Lewis's talent is good, but he's 2 years away. So I think Lewis is a long shot there. I think he's a long shot. Vassell's they love guys who could defend. They love guys who could defend. So I think he's a real play for them at 10 if they keep the pick.
Desmond Bain is a very interesting name out of TCU. We've been talking about him for a while now. The senior, the wing player, brings an awful lot to the table. Maybe a little bit of a reach to take him at number 10, but that's a name that you talk about experienced college basketball players, which seems to be a thing for James Jones. When it comes to drafting, that is certainly Desmond Bain in that spot, to be sure.
Yeah, Bain's a guy that I've had him in my list of top five guys that they would draft for a while. He's climbed up the draft charts. A lot of people had him in the second round when we first started talking about him, and now he's projected to go somewhere around 20. He may be a reach at 10. But look what
so
they did with Cam Johnson.
Right.
So that's why I like Bain as an option. I'm not going to rule him out.
Yeah, all right. As far as in general, they're sitting at number 10.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what they did a year and a half ago on draft night, all right? They were sitting at number 6. They went back to 11. They got Cam Johnson. That was so love, bro. They got Dario Saric. They got Aaron Baines, I should say. They drafted Cam Johnson. They drafted Ty Jerome. It was very... They didn't just sit at 6 and take a guy. They used 6... TJ Warren, and they started moving all around the board, right? All sorts of moves, all sorts of trades, all sorts of activity. Do you anticipate something similar this year with them sitting at 10 in terms of them using that and other pieces they have to start moving around the board a little bit on draft night?
I think that it's very possible that they do everything except move up. I do not see the Suns moving up. I could see the Suns moving out altogether by trading the pick for a player. I think that's an option. The 10th pick is a valuable pick. There's definitely interest in that pick. I spoke with a team today that told me that they've had some conversations with the Suns about moving up to 10. So I know there are teams that are looking to move up a little bit. So I think that trading down and getting a player is an option. I think trading out and getting a player is an option. And I think keeping the pick is an option. The only thing that I don't see happening is them moving up in the draft, because then you'd have to give up assets to move up. And I don't think they're in a position to do that.
I mean, it's really interesting to think. You think about what they accomplished last year. They used the draft as an avenue to address their starting power forward and their backup center. right? In addition to getting Cam Johnson, and in addition to getting Ty Jerome, they used the draft as a means to acquire two veteran players. Then in the moment, we thought, eh, okay, they're all right. I mean, Aaron Baines ended up playing a big role early last year, and Dario Saric ended up playing a big role late last year. I have a feeling that that's going to be James Jones' thing, that he's going to try to do that again this year. I don't have the sources you do. This is just me being fanboy, kind of guessing along here. But it just feels like if that's what he was able to do last year, he might try to do the same thing this year to see if he can use the draft as a vehicle to address depth and address positions and try to get more players in here, just like he did last year with Saric and Baines.
Look, this I don't think it's really rocket science here. I expect that he'll look for players that could play. You know, guys that could come in and play right now. None of these guys. I mean, Sadiq Bey, good player, not a great athlete, could dribble, pass, shoot, nothing great, solid. Vassell, you know, shoots okay, solid player, you know, knows how to play. Bane, smaller lengthwise than those other guys, kind of stubby, but he could shoot, he could dribble. I mean, these players aren't like, okay, this guy's going to come in and be one of your top three rotation guys. No, you're looking for guys that could come in and be your seventh, eighth, ninth guy off the bench and be part of a rotation. You'd be happy with that.
CenturyLink Field has been a house of horrors for most NFL teams over the last several years. Why have the Cardinals been able to avoid that? We don't have any answers, but we'll try to give you some reasons next on the Burns and Gambo Show. We're trying to figure out why the Arizona Cardinals have had such success in Seattle when nobody else in the league has. We went to the experts, the guys who play in this game. And what was their answer? I don't know, man. I have no idea.
I don't know, because last year was my first time playing in Seattle. So, like, I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I wasn't a part of any of the other. I was the last few years before that, I was hurt. Last year was the first time me going to Seattle and playing, actually, in a game, and we won. So, I know one thing about our team is when we come out the field with that juice, we're a tough bunch to get with. So we just got to make sure we come into the field with that energy so we can, you know, put a good show on.
That's DJ Humphreys who basically said, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea why. You know,
yeah,
why?
It's just odd. I mean, it's such a good home team, you know. Yeah, you had probably the best reason for why it could be happening. You know, your reasoning was that a lot of those games are late in the season at Seattle, and, you know, maybe Seattle doesn't have a lot to play for because their playoff positioning is set, and maybe some years that was the case, some years it wasn't. But yeah, it's odd. It's odd to think that Seattle has all the success here and the Cardinals have all the success there, and because Seattle should have, you know, with fans in the stand, they have one of the best home field advantages. That's a tough place to go play.
Since 2013, the Cardinals are 5-2 in Seattle. Seattle against the rest of the league over that time span is 42-11. So they're basically winning roughly 80% of their games against everybody else but the Cardinals. They're losing roughly 80% of their games to the Arizona Cardinals when they play them at home. It's and anybody who's a Cardinals fan, we've known about this for a while, right? It's the oddity of this rivalry, how Seattle always wins here and the Cardinals always win there. It got, you know, turned on its side a little bit this year with the Cardinals' victory at home. I mean, they just haven't enjoyed a lot of home wins over Seattle. The fans, that'll be an unusual element to it, though we're all kind of getting used to the new norm. It's going to be strange watching a Cardinals-Seahawks game in Seattle where the only noise that's going to be made is fake pumped-in crowd noise. That's going to be very, very strange.
It is. I mean, I would have never in a million years thought that we'd be at this point right now in November and not have fans in the stands in sports. When this pandemic hit in, you know, March, I would have never thought that. But, you know, it is what it is.
Sure.
We'll go there. But these guys are starting to, you're right. You're starting to get used to it. You're starting to, you know, you play enough games without the fans. Okay, the first time it's a little weird. The second time it's a little weird. By the fourth time, it's like, okay, that becomes a little bit more of your norm.
You know what? And it's weird. I don't even really care that much anymore because I'm seeing the struggles that college football is going through just to put games on. And I'm just grateful I've got a game to watch.
I mean, Colorado's like, hey, we want to play somebody this week. Yeah. We can't play ASU. Like, is there anybody we can play? Anybody? So, they want to play a game. Yeah. They're like, we can play, but ASU can't. No, we want to play somebody.
Right.
They're looking for an opponent.
They're looking for an opponent. And they're not the only one. Ole Miss and Texas A&M, their game got nuked this weekend. I'm sure there will be more. I mean, we expect there's going to be more.
2 weeks ago. Was it 15 this past weekend?
I think it sounds about right. Yeah.
And then, you know, who knows what it's going to be for this coming weekend.
I'm just not going to get all that wound up about whether there are fans there. I mean, yeah, I'd love it for there to be fans there. But, man, at this point, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that the NFL has found a way to power through this and keep playing. I mean, we're more than halfway through the season, and they're, knock on wood, away they go. They're still playing. So fans or no fans, I don't know. But I do know that the Cardinals, if they can win in Seattle and continue their streak of being able to win in Seattle, then that credibility factor of them not only winning the NFC West, but winning the NFC in general, takes huge strides over the weekend, right? I mean, suddenly, they're still a contender to win the NFC, of course. I think they're going to be viewed upon as a much more legit contender if they beat Seattle.
I think all of a sudden you turn your attention to the two games against the Rams. Like, you beat Seattle twice, so you're a game up on Seattle, and they can't tie you. They have to pass you. So, you know, you have to lose two games, and they can't lose. You've got control with the wins of Seattle. And then all of a sudden you turn your attention to the two games against the Rams.
Yep.
And, you know, I think the Cardinals have had some issues with the Rams over the years. The Rams have had some pretty good success against the Cardinals, if I'm not mistaken. So now those two games become the, you know, who is going to take this division crown, the Rams or the Cardinals?
And then the advantages of winning another division game, the advantages of winning another conference game, you know, when it comes to tiebreakers and scenarios and things like that.
Seattle lost to the Rams the first time, you know, so, you know, you may look at it. Okay, what's the possibility you end up in a three-way tie? Right now, it's a three-way tie. You can't rule that out.
No, you can't.
What if they end up in a three-way tie? The Cardinals have beaten Seattle twice. The Rams have beaten, you know, Seattle twice. Then it comes really, you know, comes down to...
If the Cardinals win on Thursday, they're 3-0 in the division.
3-0.
I mean, that's a split against the Rams, right? I split against the Rams, take care of business against a terribly beat-up 49ers team. You're 5-1 in the division. You don't even have to sweep the Rams at that point.
Yeah, and I don't even want to get into what would the tiebreaker be if they split the Rams and they end up tied with the Rams. Because, like, that could happen, too. I mean, maybe you end up tied with the Rams and it comes down to that. So... we can't really get into that right now, but we do know that if you can beat Seattle, you really push ahead of them because they have to pass you. They can't tie you.
Yeah, it's time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight, brought to you by our friends at Coors Light. Enjoy game day specials valley-wide at Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers every Saturday. Both proud sponsors of ASU football. Go Devils, what is on tonight? Oh, we have Mac. Okay, we have. There's Mac football to bail us out. Look at that. We've got Buffalo beating Bowling Green right now, 14-3, and it looks like we got a couple of the games in the Mac coming up this evening. I'm pulling up the schedule right now, but it looks like we have some games. We have some games in college football. If you want to watch that tonight, Gambo. I can tell you're very interested in Mac football.
Mac
I can see
football.
It. Buffalo versus Bowling Green.
What about the Bundesliga schedule?
Akron versus Kent State. Oh, Ohio, Miami of Ohio was canceled tonight. That's not going to happen.
Oh.
But you do have some Mac football tonight if you want to watch
Yeah. Yeah, I got that.
Something tells me you're not going to be watching Mac football tonight.
No, I didn't watch The Good Doctor last night. Maybe I'll watch that with the wife.
Maybe. This is us, perhaps? Tuesday night. You know, I thought you watched that with Chelsea.
I never watched that.
Chelsea watches it, though,
is it
right?
The guy that died?
Yes.
Oh, she loved that.
Yeah. It's still on, so it's on tonight. You should watch it with her.
There is a stupid show that I kind of like a little bit, where you got to determine by the look of a person if they're a good singer or not.
Oh,
That's a good singer. No, he's not. That's a terrible singer. No, that's a good singer.
It's like the opposite of the Masked Singer.
You can hear my voice, see my voice or something like that. I'm like, you know what? That's actually pretty good. I kind of like it.
Big Red Rage is coming up next. Ron Wolfley, Paul Calvisi, Dave Pasch. We're going to relive the great moment that was Sunday night or Sunday afternoon. We're out of here. We're going to see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock right here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.